sir?
Oh, yeah, I don't think I need any notes here. I just want to...
Senator, you've just come away with a discussion with several of the representatives of the American Soybean Association. What will you take with you as far as their views and attitudes?
Well, I think I'd take with me about what I expected. They've done a great deal of work in exports and one of the pioneers, and it's a good association that I've known about for a long time, but I've never had a chance to sit down and meet with their board, so I take away a feeling that they want independence, they want profit from the free market system, not some government control program, that they're opposed to embargoes except in some case of national emergency, and just a feeling that farmers want to make it on their own, and they want the government to, if anything, be a partner, but not be in their way.
Do you have a feeling, sir, that you have a good enough grasp of the soybean situation to make intelligent decisions?
Oh, I think so. I've been on the House Committee 8 years and the Senate Committee 8 years, and I know enough about farmers and agriculture, and I know where to get good, sound advice if I don't have the answer. I think that's about as important sometimes as saying, oh, yes, I have the answer. I can go to the ASA or somewhere and get the facts and help me make a judgment, but I think my judgment's fairly sound in agriculture matters.
Do you think that farmers, and especially soybeans, could be criticized as a special interest situation?
Well, you could always criticize any commodity group, whether it's soybeans or wheat or any other group, take it outside of agriculture, because they have a special interest. But I don't think special interest, depends on how you say it, I guess it's the tone of your voice, but they're especially interested in the farmers, and they're interested in their membership, and they want their farmers to make a profit, not an unreasonable profit, but a profit. If you can't make a profit in agriculture, you might as well go into some other line of work. And we want farmers to stay on the farm. They're very important to our balance of payments. They're the backbone of our economy. And I say, yes, sure, they're a special interest. They're the kind of special interest we need.
Do you believe that they're forgotten in Washington?
I don't say forgotten. I just believe that organized labor, for example, has too much of a hold, and agriculture has slipped back into the background some. There's so many House members in both parties that really don't understand agriculture. They're not hostile. They just don't represent any farmers. Now, every senator has farmers in his state, some more than others, so I always find in the Senate we get a little better response to farm legislation than we do in the House, because as senators we understand, or at least we can be told, the importance of agriculture in our states.
Thank you very much.
Is that all right? I didn't want to get...
Could you autograph this for my son?
Sure.
He said, Dad, give the autograph.
I'm going to go. Wait, wait.
Thank you very much. My son wanted to make sure he got it. Oh, thank you,
Also, as we are now finding out, we're on the campaign trail to make our opposition tell where they really stand. Will the real Jimmy Carter stand up? Bob Dole, unlike our opposition, has pride in America. And he knows that Americans have not lost pride in our country, as our opposition says we have. Bob Dole, do we want the political party of the Wayne Hayes and the Playboys Congress to put a Playboy in the White House? Bob Dole's message is a message of pride in America. It's a message of faith in our economic system. It's a message of military strength. And it's a message of freedom. The opposition's message is the usual message that I've been hearing for the last 30 and 40 years. A message of gloom and a message of doom. Bob Dole's message is our message, the Republican message. And that message is that America today is the greatest and freest nation on the face of the earth. I am now happy to present to you the number one ambassador of Americanism, Bob Dole, the next Vice President of the United States.
Out here. Well, nice to be in Waterloo. This may be where Carter meets his Waterloo, too, so I think... Someone told me the peanut is the easiest nut to crack. And we're working on that cracking process now. I want to say, first of all, I'm very proud to be here with John McDonald and, of course, Chuck Grassley. But I want Chuck to have some company in the Congress. And I know you're going to send him back from the 3rd District, but I hope we elect some other Republicans in this great state. When I was in the House, it was 6-1 Republican. Now it's 5-1 Democrat. And Chuck needs somebody to visit with. So... I can't see all the people, but I'll try to talk with everyone. And we just completed our debate with Senator... he's a friend of mine. I can't think of his name, but... Mondale, right. Well, we are good friends. I kept saying all night long what a friend... I was of his, and then he called me a hatchet man. I can't understand. I guess Democrats just can't bring themselves to say anything nice about anyone, and I'm reminded about how Carter runs around the country insulting everyone. He insulted all the black Americans. Then he insulted George Wallace. Then he insulted the late President Johnson. Then someone insulted Billy Graham, and I said about 2 weeks ago that... the reason he goes back home on weekends is to make phone calls apologizing to all the people he's insulted during the week. And that's why... that's why he's always in planes on weekends. Besides, he's planning for his retirement there after November 2nd. I think Governor Carter paid me the highest compliment I've had in this campaign. He said after the debate I wasn't fit to be on the ticket. And I assumed he meant his, and I agreed very much. And you can always tell when you're drawing blood. You can always tell when it starts to pinch. You can always tell when it starts to hurt. Because then they start to scream. And it's one thing for Governor Carter to run around this country and denigrate our country and the President of the United States and accuse the President of lack of compassion, lack of competence, lack of leadership, and in effect say the President of the United States has lied, that he's somehow tainted with Watergate, that he's somehow tainted with campaign funds, and he doesn't bother to apologize to the President. I suggested last week he should apologize to the president, but then I thought it over and decided maybe he shouldn't apologize to the president because he apologizes so often that contrition comes so easy to Governor Carter that it really doesn't mean anything. And when I make a mistake or you make a mistake, and then you give your apology to your friend or your enemy for that matter, it means something. It's a mark of respect. It's a mark of decency. I don't think Governor Carter had that in mind. I think Governor Carter has one goal, and I don't quarrel with that goal, but I quarrel the way he's trying to achieve it. He decided some 3 years ago to be President of the United States, and he sort of started everything right in this state of Iowa. He came to this state with one story on abortion, left this state with another story on abortion, and he's been mixed up ever since. And as I said in the debate on Friday, we're having three debates for the presidential candidates. We only needed one. But they're having three so that Carter can explain all three of his positions on each issue on different nights. And that's really what it's all about. Now, I've known President Ford for 16 years. I know him to be a decent and an honest and a compassionate American, concerned about your freedom and freedom in the world. It's been said of President Ford that whether he wins or loses on November 2nd, he's going to either leave the White House or stay in the White House as the same decent, honest man of compassion who came to that White House in a very troubled time in August of 1974. And that in itself says a lot for a man who assumes such an awesome responsibility, the highest office in the land, the most powerful office in the world, and he kept his balance. He's still Jerry Ford. He's still accessible. He's still open. He's still candid. He's still warm. And he still communicates with the American people. I think one thing above all others stands out as I look at the political landscape. And I see a great many young people in this audience. For that, I'm very thankful. I see a great many mothers and fathers and grandfathers and grandmothers and very young people, not yet old enough to vote in this audience. And for that, we're very thankful. But as I look around, I don't see anybody in uniform. No one in this audience that I can see, except for band uniforms, I'm talking to. No one with a gun in their hand. No one on home leave in Waterloo waiting to go back to some foreign country to fight some battle. And the point I make is that we're at peace in the world. And the point I made on Friday night, not one American is being shot at. Not one American is being hospitalized. Not one American is coming home to Waterloo or any other place in America for burial. And that's partly true because we have strength in this nation, because we're militarily strong for the sake of peace, and because we have strong leadership in President Ford, and I think that's very important. You know, it's easy to run down your competition, whether it's in high school or whether it's in business or whether it's in agriculture or labor or whatever. You can always find fault with the other man or the other woman. That's one thing in politics, I guess, but when Governor Carter starts finding fault with our nation, then it sort of gets my hackles up. He said in the last debate that we were weak. We were weak as a nation. We were not respected as a nation. That's just not true, and he knows it's not true. What could happen, and probably what would happen in a Carter administration if he carried out his cuts in the defense budget as he's planned, is what we would be weak. We would be weak in the world. We would lose our respect in the world. But we have peace today in Iowa and my home state of Kansas and everywhere we travel and across this land because we're strong. Because we're strong. And I think that's the real message that we need to consider for the next 2 weeks. And I said to Senator Mondale and those who may have been viewing, I thought most of you might be at a football game on Friday night, but apparently, how many went to the football game? Well, quite a few. Yeah, well, I'll see you after the program. Yeah. Oh, no, he did. I don't blame you. I'd have gone myself. But I said during the debate, if all Senator Mondale and Governor Carter can do is travel around this country trying to wrap Watergate and the Nixon pardon around the necks of President Ford and Bob Dole and all other Republicans, Chuck Grassley, whoever might be running, then we ought to talk about some other things in the past, about how the war in Vietnam started, about how World War II started, and how the war in Korea started. If they want to talk about the strong economy that Senator Mondale boasts about under Democratic administrations, we're going to be compelled to point out it was a war economy. And they talk about the unemployment rate when we came into power. What they don't talk about is a 500,000 Americans who were in Southeast Asia and the number of Americans working in defense plants in a war economy. Now, I don't like unemployment. President Ford doesn't like unemployment. Unemployment rate is going down, and it's going to continue to go down as we work through the private sector. We work to slow down inflation. But I don't advocate some armed conflict as a remedy, and I don't suggest they do. But I suggest this, that every time Mondale opens his mouth about Watergate, I'm going to remind him of something else that happened in history in the past. We might have to have just one more debate after the election to get things straight. But I think the Republicans are entitled to that, and the Democrats are entitled to know, and the Independents are entitled to know what it's all about. And to insinuate or infer or even suggest that President Ford played a role in Watergate is dirty politics, and they know it's dirty politics. And even though President Ford was cleared by the prosecutor's office, he's been smeared by the Democrat ticket. And they know that. They knew what they were about. Trying to convince young Americans and other Americans that somehow you couldn't trust President Ford. Well, I say trust is something that must be earned. And I believe President Ford has earned that trust. I want to say, too, before I finish, and that there's been a lot of talk about the Nixon-Ford administration. Somehow, the Democrats have decided that if you mention Nixon, that turns a person off. Therefore, he won't vote for Ford because you mentioned Nixon first. Well, Nixon Ford is not his name. It's Jerry Ford is the name of our president. So I've been suggesting we ought to take a look at the Maddox-Carter record in Georgia. That's Lester Maddox. Now, Lester is very progressive. He used to pass out axe handles to keep blacks out of his restaurant. And what did Jimmy Carter say about him in those days? Well, let me tell you, these are Jimmy's quotes, not mine, but you'll probably deny it tomorrow. He said at one time, I hope I measure up to his standards.
He said that about Lester Maddox. And what did he say another time? He said Maddox has done more than any governor in the history of our state to open the doors of the Capitol and the mansion to Georgians. It's dependent on your color. But that's the Maddox-Carter administration. If they want to play that game, we'll trot out some more quotes. We're engaged in a contest between Gerald Ford and Governor Carter. And I think with only 2 weeks to go, it's time we got about the business of doing that. I think we look at the record, and I want you to look at the record. It tilts very heavily in favor of President Ford. We're concerned about Americans. We're concerned about Social Security. We're concerned about the disabled. We're concerned about health care. We're concerned about education. But we also know that it's a height of irresponsibility to stand before this audience or any other audience in America and say, I'm going to promise you this and I'm going to promise you that, and never give you any indication how we're going to pay for it. And if you hear Senator Mondale or Governor Carter talking about education, health care, jobs, whatever it is, do you ever hear them talk about the cost, how they're going to pay for it? It's got to be done in one or two ways, higher taxes or more inflation. And inflation hurts everyone in this country, the 88 million people who are working, as well as the 7-some million who are not working. The inflation rate is still now between 5 and 6%. It's much too high, but President Ford has cut it in half. The unemployment rate is going down. The economy is in a sound recovery. Inventories are up. Housing starts are up. And this is because President Ford has held the line, because he's vetoed legislation when it was hard to do, because he's concerned about all Americans. All Americans. Black or white, rich or poor. And I get a little disgusted, frankly, having Carter stand up before an audience and say, we're going to do something about the rich. We're going to take it from the rich. We're going to do this to the rich and the corporations and all those other nasty words he can think of that sort of get the juices flowing. And then he talks about tax reform. He said he didn't think Americans wanted their taxes lowered. Anybody here doesn't want their taxes lowered? We have a doctor standing by in case you just hold up your hand. He said, but now he denies it. Now he complains about it, that if you're above the median income, your family income, you ought to have your taxes increased. He didn't know when he made that statement what the median income was, even though he'd been running for president for about 2.5 years. The median income for an Iowa family or an American family is about $14,000 per year. That's for the husband and the wife and anybody else in that family who might be working. And I don't think that bracket of income needs a tax increase. President Ford's trying to lower your taxes. I offered an amendment on the Senate floor during consideration of the tax bill to increase your personal tax exemption from $750 to $1,000 for each dependent. Every Democrat except one or two voted against it, including Senator Mondale voted against it. And then he gets on television and said, oh, I'm for tax reform, and I'm for this, and I'm for that. That would have been a $10 billion tax cut for the American people, advocated by President Ford, introduced by Senator Dole, defeated by the Democrats in the Congress. So what do they want for tax reform? If you're in agriculture, you ought to pay close attention to something else he said in that interview. He said, we're going to treat all income alike. All income is going to be treated alike. So if you sell your breeding stock, you don't get any capital gains treatment. If you buy some stock and sell it, or sell some land after you've held it for a while, you pay straight across the board. And that's what Governor Carter said, not something I dreamed up. So I say it's time he tells us about tax reform. What does he mean about tax reform? So I think you have the choice. You have the obligation. And you have the opportunity to make certain that we have sound and strong and compassionate leadership. The It's not enough to stand up before an audience and say, I'm compassionate, and I'm going to do this because I'm a good man, and I won't lie to you, just to everyone else. But it's a rough and tough campaign. When we started in Kansas City, we were some 30 points behind. And now the polls say we're 2 points or 3 points or 4 points, and one poll says 6 points. I don't know what it is, but it's a very close race. And it's going to be decided in states like Iowa. That's where it's going to be decided, in states like Iowa. And I think since Carter got his start in Iowa, he ought to get his finish in Iowa, too. And so I hope all those who listen to his stand on abortion are going to talk to him again. Yes, some of those Democrats and others who went to the caucuses supporting Governor Carter are going to ask him, as we all ought to ask him, Governor Carter, please just give us your final position. Just one more time, give us your final position on the issues. Whether it's tax reform, whether it's abortion, or whatever it is, just give it to us one more time. Please ask George Meany to let you do it for us. Please ask George Meany one more time. I had the pleasure today of meeting with the American Soybean Association Board of Directors, and we talked about agriculture, and I'll conclude. Because I'm going to have a very important role to play with President Ford as Vice President. He said very clearly that come January, one of my duties as Vice President, and they all depend on what the President says, will be to sort of be an international salesman of farm commodities, to increase our export markets where we can. That's really where the future of agriculture lies, in export markets. He's also said that I'd have a role in trying to get some accounting from North Vietnam on those who might be missing in action or POWs in Southeast Asia, because I've had a great deal of experience in that area. And so I just believe that if you're interested in agriculture, if you supply somebody who lives on the farm, if he's one of your customers, or if you're a producer, you ought to take a look at our farm policies. They want grain reserves. You remember Orville Freeman? Remember I used to sell corn on the market? Every time the price got to $1.10, he'd find some corn out of condition. And he would announce, we've got all this out of condition corn, we've got to dump on the market. So the price would go down. That's why they want grain reserves, to, quote, stabilize prices for farmers. Well, stabilized prices in Kansas means lower prices for farmers. It means lower prices in the state of Iowa. I think we've got a good farm program. We've got to update the loan rates. It's got to be revised and updated, and the target price is adjusted. But it does give the farmer freedom. It does release the farmer from a lot of dictation he had to put up with in Washington. Now, my counterpart, Senator Mondale, has said that we're going to have export licensing. That's what his bill would do, which would, in effect, embargo almost every crop right now, with the exception of wheat, from export. And I find that most people who produce soybeans like to export them. They like to export corn. They like to export wheat. And I can assure this audience that, except in some rare emergency, there aren't going to be any more grain embargoes in a Ford-Dole administration. We've had enough of that. So I would only say finally that we're going to try to hang on to Chuck Grassley's coattails in this district, because we know he's going to win by a big, big margin. He's done an outstanding job. He's probably got the best voting record in the Congress. He hasn't missed a single vote, and that says a great deal for Chuck Grassley. And I meant Senator Bill Hansen. I hope we get him reelected, too. I think he's an outstanding man and needs your help. Now, I've been saying lately, and we're going to do some traveling in January, so I'm going to make this statement. John, you can hold me to it. There was a time that whenever Governor Carter left an audience, he'd always say, "You're all invited to the White House after I win." I was at the races with him when he invited some 50,000 people, which would put quite a load on the kitchen there, but peanut butter is not too expensive. I might add that pineapple juice is a lot better for you than peanut butter. For one thing, it doesn't stick to the roof of your mouth, but just let me say this in closing, that if we're elected on November 2nd, I'm going to come back to the 3rd District in Iowa. We're going to have a big victory celebration. Thank you very much.